What is up, everybody? Welcome back to the Dynasty Rankings Podcast. I'm your host, Nate Liss. You can find me on Twitter at An Outraged Jew. And with me, of course, is Alexander McKenzie. You can find him on Twitter at Jacked Up on Mountain Dew. Now, for those of you guys that are tuning into the network, you're probably like, where the hell have you guys been? We haven't heard from you guys in like 3 weeks. The last time you did an episode, it was like a 2-minute audio drop from myself explaining to you guys that we had an episode coming in the future. Apparently this is the future because it was supposed to be 1 week later. Then it was 2 weeks. Then it was 3 weeks. So we're going to get to a lot of this at the end of the episode as we sort of talk about what our future process looks like, what some of the website and future tools look like, what we want to do with the Discord community and how we'd like to put a lot of focus around fantasy football community as a whole and try to bring you guys into the fold, into the mix of this show and make it a little more interactive and a little more community-based, which is something that it just hasn't been to this point in time. But the big thing we wanted to talk about to lead this show off, since we really never did a recap since the season is kind of closed in terms of fantasy football concerns, is looking back at what we got right, what we got wrong, and some of the lessons learned. And I know Alexander and I were bold in some cases, probably not as bold as some of the creators in this space who make it their life's mission to climb to the very, very top of the radio antenna and just scream it into the heavens. But we were bold in many cases. Sometimes some of our takes got us burned, which we learned with some players, guys like Zach Charbonnet. And some of our calls, you know, calls with these receivers, these running backs, some quarterbacks that were late round picks, undrafted guys, were right. So we want to go over some of that, talk about some of that process, talk about what we got wrong, and then kind of get into what it is that we are planning on doing with the website and this fantasy community going forward. So, Alexander, it's been 3 weeks since anybody's seen your face on camera. Has anything changed in your life or is pretty much the same story?
It's just colder outside, I think, really. You know, I'm still in the weeds of looking at all the data points and you know, watching it, observing all the football games and seeing what's going on. But really, yeah, no, just a little colder outside and definitely miss these chats and talking to our audience for sure.
Yeah, I had to blow the dust off this laptop the other day. Alexander and I jumped on a call a few days ago. And the laptop like creaked open and I had to wipe the dust off it and turn it back on. So it's good to be back doing this. You know, we're really excited to talk to you guys about the tools and ingenuity and sweat equity that Alexander has put into this algorithm. And it's very smart. I would dare say it's unrivaled in many cases when we talk about its power and its utility and its functionality. Obviously, like anything else, I think that there's a lot of things that could be worked out. There's a lot of iterations. We have a lot of big goals and hopes with it. But Alexander has put a incalculable amount of work into this thing. And I've seen it and the effort behind it. So it'll be exciting for you guys to look at it. And I think one of the most exciting parts about it, and Alexander and I talk about this, is the ability to utilize some of these tools, namely the trade calculator that we're going to release to you guys for free, which we'll talk about. And use it in juxtaposition to what exists already and take those dynasty trades that you guys plan to make in the off season and compare it to what our rankings say about them, because we have the, you know, machine learning, artificial intelligence behind it, but we also have the humanistic side of it where Alexander and I go through, take the lessons that we learned this year, implement some of those, look ahead to, you know, scheme changes, quarterback changes, systematic changes, and just keep refining on what it is that we believe is valuable. So there's a lot to get into, but let's start with, you know, what we got right before we have to spank ourselves for what we got wrong and what we got right. One of the players that we really like coming into this year, and I've got plenty of YouTube comments saying contrary, was Rashad White. I had a lot of people after our episodes talking about how Rashad White was a value because where he was sitting in the rankings, his upside, his previous track record, this future offense, everybody said, look out for Sean Tucker. Sean Tucker's coming. And I never saw Sean Tucker. Did you?
No. I think I saw one play and I think he got 2 yards. So yeah, that's pretty much the extent of my exposure to Sean Tucker.
So, and I mean, I think that was most people's extent of whatever was Sean Tucker. And admittedly, that profile looked great, but we also learned this lesson with a lot of other young running backs in the league that had much higher draft capital than Sean Tucker. So while people were dismissing running backs with second round draft capital and proclaiming the victory lap already for undrafted free agents that had medical concerns potentially, they were sort of saying, hey, guys like Rashad White are no good. They're not going to work out. And Rashad White ends up being, by the math here, looks like RB4 on the year, 15.8 fantasy points per game. So number 10 in total fantasy points per game. Had a really good year, 64 catches, did what we expected him to do while in an offense that was, you know, quarterbacked by Baker Mayfield. So, you know, what about Rashad White coming into the year, were we really leaning into in terms of the skill set that we believe was going to shine? And looking back on it in retrospect, what was right about that profile?
I think what was right about the profile was, number one, the size, speed, athleticism, right? Like, player profiler shows it. He's like 84th percentile speed score for a running back. So he's 6'2", 214. He's got the size. And one of the craziest part was his target share. He had an insane amount of targets when he was at Arizona State. So his college profile just was, he was riddled with, college target share. And even last year alone, he was getting an insane amount of target share, even with fighting for touches with Leonard Fournette. And then I think really just, you know, the likely, you know, the, even though they signed Sean Tucker, they didn't really show any signs of really getting anybody else to kind of compete with Rashad White. You could take coach speak to an extent, but there were a lot of conversations with the media that the coaches basically said that Rashad White is our guy, so and so forth. But what the data showed is just a running back with great size, great speed, and getting a huge target share. Last year, he looked kind of slender, and one of the reports that came through those, you know, those preseason conversations was the fact that he had gained up to 220. So you got a 6'2", 220 back that's young, that's going to get an insane amount of targets because their quarterback is, you know, Baker Mayfield runs around a little bit, but he targets his quarterbacks a lot. You know, we talked about that during the conversation about how many targets the running backs got while he was in Cleveland. I just think Rashad White, again, those three things. He got a great target share in college, good college dominator, and size, speed, athleticism. And then his rookie year was underrated in the fact of how many targets he was receiving. So if he was going to get more of that rushing share, this was one of those three down backs that was going to smash, and he did this year.
Yeah, 272 rush attempts, 70 targets. And what really cracks me up about this with Rashad White, and going back to sort of the draft scenario side of things, guys, get off your high horse about draft age. Everybody was all over Rashad White for the fact that he was an old running back. And there's always this narrative that because you're older, you know, you're likely, you know, more advanced than the players that you're facing, and that's why you're successful. But again, I ask you the question, had Christian McCaffrey come out later, had, you know, Saquon Barkley come out later, had any of these guys come out later, do you think they wouldn't be elite? Of course they'd be elite. They're great players, and oftentimes those players come out earlier. But just be ready for the future of the NIL deals and all this other stuff. Guys playing later than you ever expected and really just running amok with the age data. But again, at the end of the day, good players are going to play great. You look at a guy like Bijan Robinson, whose opportunity was kind of throttled this year. He's young, he's elite, but the coaching staff killed him. So it's a very interesting predicament to be in. But I totally agree on the Rashad White side of things that, you know, it came to fruition, the passing game. We're going to talk about a running back here in a little bit that might be a miss, and I don't necessarily think he is, but the reason that he might be is because the target share itself didn't come to fruition the way that we would have wanted. But here's Rashad White, 25 years old, and then currently we can look him up on the rankings websites, but Rashad White, RB9 overall. And again, this is really interesting because coming into the year, that was our big thing. He could climb. And we could go back to the video. He was at RB22, RB23.
He was RB21 in August. Yeah.
Okay. And we're like, this guy could climb way above that number. Shocker, he did. And he's sitting here now, and he's a guy that a lot of dynasty players are going to enter 2024 with great confidence in. So despite the ranking, despite, you know, people sort of assuming Sean Tucker was going to be more of a factor than he was, he ended up playing well, and that was a guy that we were really behind. Another name, and again, I think that there seems to probably still be some questions around it in terms of quarterbacks, Sam Howell. Now, we're going to consider Sam Howell a hit for sure, but I think there's a multitude of reasons why, because there may be some people out there that think that Sam Howell is not the future here with changes in coaching staff and the season that he put together. But in terms of opportunity and in terms of finishes, there are a few guys that stepped in and did more than Sam Howell did.
Yeah, again, like we referenced his production in college, right? I think that was one of the things is we couldn't understand how a quarterback with this production, he had decent size as a quarterback, and he rushed a decent amount as well. Yep. That really fell to the fifth round. And again, off the rip, the coaching staff said they were going to give him the opportunity, and they did. And you got a guy that, you know, he had some, you know, situations where, you know, he was going to throw the ball a ton. He came, you know, a new offensive coordinator and stuff like that. But we've seen it in his profile coming out of college that he was going to throw it out a lot, and he was going to run a little bit as well. And that led to some boom games and probably won some teams some weeks. I think, yeah, there's some sort of question a little bit in his, future just because of the up and downs of, you know, losing the head coach and some of his turnovers during the year. But there's a number of quarterbacks that, you know, produced at a high volume but also had a high turnover rate that still got opportunity. I'm curious to see what the future holds with Sam Howell. But in terms of the outproducing, you know, what he was projected, I think Sam Howell definitely met that goal.
That's a fact. That's really what it comes down to. Again, fifth-round guy, kind of sitting in the background, definitely the best quarterback from his own draft class still. Yeah. I think that's fairly definitive at this point. 16.4 fantasy points per game. And then you brought up the rushing thing. I remember people dismissing what he did in college with that single season when he lost all of his weapons. We've seen with 5 rushing touchdowns this year, 48 carries, number 10 in the league in total rush yards at the quarterback position. Again, they looked at the athleticism and said, you know, this guy's probably doesn't have it. And it was certainly a part of his game that added value to what it was that he was already doing. But you brought it up. You know, question is, what does he look like next season? Does he get an opportunity? Does he compete for a starting job? Who does this team bring in? I know that there's rumors currently swirling around about quarterbacks that could end up here, whether it's Caleb Williams, whether it's somebody to that effect. I've heard that as sort of a fresh start with this team, this organization going forward. But if it's not a guy that gets immense draft capital, and even if it is, you know, we've seen before these guys get some starts while these, you know, high draft pick quarterbacks sit temporarily. But I would imagine a guy like Caleb would start right away. But if it's a later pick, if it's a second round pick, if it's a late first round pick, if it's a veteran who comes in, I could definitely see Howell still being in that mix to get his opportunities.
Absolutely.
So Howell was a guy that we liked. And again, I don't know what the future holds for him. One player, though, that I know you and I really liked, and it's kind of funny, and we should probably, we'll hit up his counterpart after this. This was a receiver that we talked about quite a bit, and a player that we continued to say, look, I know that coming into the year, everybody believed that this other player over here was likely the guy, but it became more and more evident across the year that there was a chance this receiver was potentially taking over that spot. And we're, of course, talking about Jaden Reed of the Green Bay Packers. You know, we came into the season, you and I talked about Christian Watson. We talked about where he was sitting in the rankings, what his potential was. We didn't get a full year out of him. We'll talk about him in a minute. But in terms of getting somebody right, Jaden Reed was consistently a second-round guy in Dynasty startups. He was a guy that I saw typically going after Roschon Johnson, Marvin Mims, some of these names at the top, and he would typically fall into that 204 to 207 range next to Cedric Tillman and some of these other names, Jonathan Mingo, whatever. But he started to really show out his dynamic capabilities as a rusher, as a deep threat, as a slot guy, and it's all really kind of culminated itself with great quarterback play from Jordan Love. And now we're looking at Jaden Reed, a guy that we kept saying, hey, buy now before he takes off. And he's on the radar so much so that I don't know how you can easily snag him. But what about Jaden Reed's profile leads you to believe that we got him right, despite the fact that by the numbers, it very clearly looks like he had a great year?
I think, again, so he's a pretty big, decently big wide receiver, 5'11", almost 200 pounds. Sort of that prototypical look that the new age wide receivers look like. I mean, Player Profiler's got him best comparable to Stephon Diggs. It's a pretty good comp as well. And he had decent speed, 80th percentile 40-yard dash, but he had a great breakout age, coupled with the fact that he had a second-round draft capital with the Green Bay Packers. And one of the things that won't show up necessarily on the numbers that we see significantly in the numbers in his college profile, but we see in the advanced metrics is, his dynamism. He's heavy slot usage, but his yards per attempt are significantly high. Couple that with a really, really good breakout age, 98th percentile. It just showed you a wide receiver that, people were pretty low on just because of the age. He's going to be 24 this upcoming year, but he was a receiver that, produced really at a really young age. And then in the NFL, and I still think he's a buy, heavy slot usage, hovering around guys that are, some of the top guys like Amon-Ra St. Brown. He's got more slot usage than someone like Amon-Ra St. Brown, but it's also his yards per attempt were significantly high.
And, you brought this up. One of the biggest things is what we're seeing. So we've got it right now. Again, if you guys are on Spotify watching the video, if you're on YouTube checking this out right now, Jaden Reed, as I've sorted here on ProFootballFocus.com, 20% of 179 targets set for our threshold. Number 6 in the league when sorting by slot rate, 75.7%. What's really impressive is when I slide over here, 10.3 was Zadot. That's a monster number. I mean, right down, I could slide down to Christian Kirk. That's a pretty huge number considering oftentimes guys with a higher slot rate have a lower average depth of target. Again, go down to Amon-Ra St. Brown, 8.0 versus, again, 10.3. But what's really impressive in there, and I'll do the compare and contrast, if we go to Jaden Reed, what makes the profile so much juicier is that not only is he a guy that's being utilized in this, greater than average short area slot usage, but he's also getting targeted downfield at a greater rate than most guys that are playing the slot. Oftentimes, guys in the slot have, this short area range. Sometimes it's in the medium, intermediate range. 21.1%, 19 targets on the year. You and I were talking about this. If we go to a guy like Jackson Smith, who had, I believe, about a 5% lower total slot rate, if we go to him and look at his deep usage, again, knowing that Jaden Reed was 21%, go to Jackson Smith, 12.2% of his total usage was deep targeting. So it's really kind of a blend in that profile where you're getting the explosive opportunity. Jordan Love has been very, very good, much better than, again, I think given credit for entering the year. I think most people thought he was going to be a flop. Turns out he's actually a ridiculous buy low in Dynasty. And Jaden Reed was the beneficiary of better quarterback play and dynamic usage amongst this offense. So We got it right. I mean, it's a guy that we were definitely behind, and he played incredibly well. So, kudos to us again. Do I have a sound effect on any? Oh, I got one. There we go. That's such a crappy one. We gotta get a better clap. All right. So that was Jaden Reed. We're gonna rip through some of these. The next one that I want to bring up is somebody that you and I had talked about going into the preseason, and the eventual change to this offense, and that was Zay Flowers. We talk about Jaden Reed having that new wave profile. Zay Flowers, as you had talked about on some previous episodes, looks like all these sort of new wave dominant guys. Not the biggest guy on the field, but very good athlete. College profile was impressive the final year coming out of school. And this was a guy that had the draft capital. And in many rookie drafts, I found myself faced with a couple options. And Zay Flowers was a guy that I routinely went with, thank God, because he looked really well at times, despite the fact that, again, a lot of people said, no, Rashad Bateman's the guy here.
Oh, absolutely. Again, we looked at, like, his deep target usage back in college, and it was, you know, absolutely ridiculous. You see it now where, you know, he's sort of the manufacturer touches, and he's getting a majority of the touches, and he's pretty dynamic. He translated extremely well from his explosiveness in college to the NFL, and coupled with the draft capital that guaranteed him targets and usage, and relegated sort of, you know, Rashad Bateman to a significantly lower target share than Zay Flowers. I think Zay Flowers, again, in this Ravens offense where, you know, they were missing sort of a receiver like this. I think we talked about what Zay Flowers would look like in this offense, and we talked about how much Marquise Brown was used a lot. And I think, you know, I think he was even used significantly more underneath and in the screen game. And can't wait to see what he does next year with, if they start utilizing him a little bit more explosive passing downfield. He looks fantastic.
Rashad Bateman never had a 10 target game with Lamar Jackson, and Zay Flowers had a bunch of them. And that was one of the big things right off the bat. And again, not to apologize, Rashad Bateman's a fine player, but like we're so far past Rashad Bateman right now. And you look at him, the target separation was great. The EPA was strong. The total route wins, number two in the league. Quarterback rating when targeted was really high. Just everything that you want to see from a perspective of him on his own performing was really, really great. Irrespective of maybe the profile of what we saw from him here. Because again, guys, remember Jalen Waddle year one versus Jalen Waddle year two. Two very different players. So we don't even know that we haven't fully unlocked what it is that Zay Flowers can do going forward an additional year down the road. And if we look at where he is currently being valued, sometimes, and again, using fantasy calc, this is based on actual trades and leagues, like you're trading Mike Evans for Zay Flowers all day long. I don't know why they're side by side.
Yeah, no, I mean, you get a young dynamic player that hasn't even reached his ceiling yet versus a wide receiver sort of near the end of his career. Now, he produced at a fantastic level, but we don't know what the future holds for Mike Evans. We don't know if he's a Tampa Bay Buccaneer. And then we've seen these aging wide receivers at this age moving to new situations that they don't get that target share. It doesn't translate nearly as often.
Yeah, I've been down this road so many times with these wide receivers. I'm not ready to get hurt again. Okay, this is a player that I'm definitely excited to talk about, but coming into the year, this is really funny. So I did this long, like 25-minute video where I broke down this quarterback preseason when everybody had him like QB 14 or 15. And I was very high on this quarterback. And it was like one of the worst viewed videos I ever put out. And in hindsight, I bet if I go back and watch it, it's going to seem very like prophetic in hindsight. But finishing overall as the QB3 in fantasy this year and absolutely just destroying the universe was Dak Prescott, who suddenly people realize is good. 4,500 yards, almost a 70% completion percentage, 36 touchdowns on the year, number four in fantasy points per game, even did a little rushing as well. So Dak Prescott was a guy that we talked about. Like, what did we get right about Dak Prescott? Why was he so good this year?
I think we really, you know, we attributed to the historical performances and that, you know, what he had done in previous years outside of this last year. I think there's just too much recency bias with some of these players going into each season that I think we saw Dak do this in 2021 where he threw for almost 4,500 yards. And play at a high level, even with rushing, literally identical fantasy points per game. He literally did this 2 years ago. They changed the offensive coordinator, changed up the system. CeeDee Lamb is fully integrated into this offense. So you get the quarterback that had already produced at 4,500 yards 2 years ago, and then now you get a fully unlocked, fully integrated center of focal point of the offense, CeeDee Lamb, and you know, you add other weapons like Brandon Cooks in this offense. They were showing you signs that they were going to just utilize an insane amount of Dak Prescott's arm, and they did for throwing for 590 attempts. I think it just shows you that you should be buying these guys that have done it. You go every other year, 590 attempts 2023, 596 attempts 2021, 2019, 596 attempts. You know, he's throwing a ton, and he almost threw for 5,000 yards in 2019. I think people are actually finally starting to respect Dak Prescott for the elite passer that he is. And now he gets what now everyone considers the number one wide receiver in Dynasty, CeeDee Lamb, for the X amount of both their futures are tied together. And they get another dynamic weapon in Jake Ferguson. Brandon Cooks, I'm not sure if he had signed only maybe a one-year deal. I don't know. I would assume that if they play well, he probably has an opportunity to be in that offense. But if they add anybody else dynamic, I mean, the sky's the limit for Dak Prescott. I think some of the problems with him has just been some of the injury history. And, you know, I think some people let these playoff performances influence what they're doing. Playoff performance isn't going to impact what you do in the regular season when you're trying to fight for a dynasty championship. So just putting that out there, Dak Prescott is definitely an elite quarterback at the position. He showcased it this year.
Came into the year as the QB16, QB17 range, and then currently sitting at QB14 on keep trade cut because these guys are still just high as can be. Yeah, I think what we saw from Dak is also one of those classic situations where a guy like CeeDee Lamb takes a step forward. You get that elite receiver season combined with a very capable quarterback. Take CeeDee Lamb off of there. Yeah, it probably doesn't look nearly like it did this year. But as you mentioned, that's not the case. They're together for the foreseeable future. And so it's just going to continue to be strong performances ahead. So that was a guy that I was really happy broke out the way that he did because, as you mentioned, the profile screamed it in the past. And I think people just had too much recency bias in their mind and not enough foresight. And because of that, now they have to pay a much higher price to get a guy that's just going to have an incredible floor year over year going forward. Okay, this is a guy that I know you talked about a lot. James Cook had it, you know, finally the opportunity really came his way. He performed well, much better than I think most people had anticipated. What is it about in retrospect looking at James Cook? Like when we look back on what was right about his profile, what came to fruition that led to that?
So I think last year he was finding touches with Devin Singletary. And so the coaching staff still kind of was hesitant to sort of give him a full workload. And there were some games where they did. They did that last year where they were giving him the full workload and he produced. Coupled with the fact that you get a 5'11", 200-pound back that really doesn't have a lot of tread from the last year, from his college career because he was lightly used. And this team drafted him with a second-round pick. And he wasn't poorly performing. He was just not getting enough usage. Devin Singletary leaves. They signed Damian Harris. Maybe Damian Harris takes some of the workload away. I find James Cook to be almost like he's not nearly as explosive as someone like maybe Jahmyr Gibbs, but they're both sort of that they're lightning. They get a heavy target share usage and they're explosive athletes. I just think James Cook to me was like the Jahmyr Gibbs light you could get at a huge discount in a Buffalo Bills offense tied to Josh Allen. Sure, you lose some of the rushing upside, but this is a guy who is commanding targets and now is getting the rush attempts coupled with that. Him and Rashad White were both players that he may not have the size of someone like Rashad White, but he's explosive. And again, a running back that was just fighting for touches, the opportunity opens up where he can get rush attempts and he's super explosive. I mean, sign me up. I think James Cook for me, they probably sign another back next year or they keep Fournette and get somebody that, you know, kind of eats still some of the goal line usage. But if he's that efficient in the light of even a low, you know, rushing share, I still think now he's getting the majority of it. And I think that's a upside play.
Yeah. I mean, coming into the year, you could have gotten three James Cooks for Donnie Pollard. You could have gotten two James Cooks for DeAndre Swift, who very different player in the second half of the year. But you're absolutely right on James Cook. I mean, this is a classic case of maybe being a little early in year one with some of these guys and maybe not truly taking into account how much proven veteran presence matters. Again, we're seeing it a bit with David Montgomery in Detroit. Obviously, you mentioned Devin Singletary here, and sometimes these guys play a bit of a factor, even though we're seeing some players break out around that. Then you get into year two, you usher in these players, Kendre Miller, potentially, where here comes year two, is the veteran in front of them, despite the paycheck, healthy? Is he still efficient? If not, how many times have we seen this guy that, again, Kendre Miller is just the first name that comes to mind, where people are kind of dismissive. Oh, he didn't get his opportunities this year. Oh, he really didn't do that much this year. Here comes year two, and suddenly they just kind of break out. Their opportunity comes, and in this case, somebody leaves and creates that opportunity for them. And obviously, based on what they did this offseason, they had a lot of faith in him. So very clearly, that was a good call. Now, you and I had talked, and we had some not-so-good calls here, and these are going to be maybe not as rooted in data on the back end, but we're going to be able to kind of, in retrospect, look at what went wrong in the analysis that led us to this. The first name, and we kind of have a twofold here, but this was Zach Charbonnet, JSN. I think on the surface, a little too high on what it was that Seattle planned to do. I don't think Seattle ever planned to deviate from the run-first mentality. I think way too much credit was given to Geno Smith, and I know we had talked about this early in the year that, you know, people didn't want to give credit to Nico Collins because of his previous production, but by God, they were certain that Geno Smith wasn't going to turn back into a pumpkin. And you and I were very high on Charbonnet. We liked the pass pro. We knew that last year Kenneth Walker wasn't really great in pass pro. We knew that Kenneth Walker was lightly used in the passing game last year. This is something that Charbonnet does really well. He was taken in the second round. The coaching staff loved him. Pete talked about him all the time. So the assumption was, hey, this guy's just going to show up and make it a 50-50 deal, and it didn't necessarily play out that way.
Yeah, no, I think, again, the profile and going into this, going into the draft, Zach Charbonnet was a conversation of the, you know, top three non-quarterback player, just because of just the profile, the size, and the athleticism. I think we overestimated what Seattle was going to do with this offense with the added weapons, that we thought that they would sort of open it up. But again, like you said, they continued to do the, you know, run first mentality. And again, we talk about some of these backs, it's sort of just the veteran, and Kenneth Walker is a very good running back, explosive, but he just, again, we were just still trying to see, well, maybe they up the pass attempts just a tick, and they really didn't. So we lost some of the, you know, opportunity for targets that maybe Zach Charbonnet could have garnered. But I think, yeah, it's just one of those situations that Seattle in the middle of the target share pool right there. Yeah, they really didn't move up that much in running back targets, and that could be coupled with the fact that they had now JSN, Tyler Lockett, and DK in an offense in which they really weren't being able to complete deep ball passes very often, and the offense kind of took a step back this year. And so with that, you know, the likelihood of being able to score sort of any fantasy points in general kind of went down significantly. And then even in opportunities in which, Charbonnet got opportunity to play, because we did, you know, talk about, so, you know, potential for any of these running backs at any time could potentially get hurt just because of the position, got opportunity. I just think the offense is really just not nearly as efficient as it was last year and limited Charbonnet.
I agree with all that. I mean, I think getting out a little early on Charbonnet and what Seattle was going to do was probably the biggest issue. The other part is it's really hard to – you get a guy that goes in the second round and you think to yourself, is Seattle that crazy? Are they really going to go and spend a second round pick on a running back and kind of shelf him and not really give him the opportunity to step in and play a much more impactful role? And yeah, that is what they did. They just really didn't give him the greatest opportunity in the world in year one. One thing I do want to point out, though, number eight at the position in routes run, despite the fact that his opportunity share was number 43. So still getting those chances to perform out there. Yards created per touch, 3.68, number 13 at the position. Obviously, very high average defenders in the box, number 16 at the position. And again, the average defenders in the box is on not a very high level of carries. So that rate might be lower depending on if he had more opportunities facing more defensive fronts. So there's a lot of reasons to still be bullish on Charbonnet. The issue is he and Kenneth Walker are separated by 1 year. And if Pete Carroll's here in two more years, wouldn't surprise me if they extend a guy like Kenneth Walker, you know, sign him to a two-year extension, three-year sort of veteran extension, and who knows if Charbonnet is just stuck in this world. With that being said, Charbonnet's still a incredible handcuff in terms of what his opportunity may like look like with an injury, but we have to chalk it up to getting it wrong just based on just not really getting his chance in year one and maybe over assuming what a veteran presence meant even after performing as well as Walker did. The other name on that list was Jackson Smith and Jigba. I know that I don't know that we really were high in the sense we could go back and listen to it. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure that you and I were saying that, you know, 80 targets was probably 80 to 100 was probably the ceiling. Yeah. And what do you end up with this? 93, which is about right for a rookie. A lot of people expect these year one Jamar Chase, Justin Jefferson type performances, and that's just not what they look like. And Jackson Smith is a guy that right now I think is actually still valued pretty low in Dynasty. Where is he right now? Jackson Smith is so wide receiver 17. So next to Pittman, you know, his ranking's actually a little more fairly done, but you look at the jump that CeeDee Lamb made this year, and you think to yourself, if Jackson Smith becomes the guy, or if his opportunity reveals itself, and again, we've talked about this idea too, and we're going to get into it more, the target realization, if DK Metcalf is in Seattle, how great is Jackson Smith's target share or overall targets ever going to really be? It's hard to imagine in a run-first offense with a player as good as DK Metcalf, who is paid like DK Metcalf is, that a guy like Jackson Smith or even DK for that matter are going to be more than 150 target guy, which would be a great amount of targets. I just kind of struggle to think what will that ceiling look like. And as a rookie, I think he did exactly what rookies do. And in a run first offense with Tyler Lockett here and DK here, I actually think he performed a lot better than maybe given credit for, all things considered.
Yeah, and he had that injury early in the season before week one, which kind of hindered him. And I believe Carroll was talking about how he was trying to limit his usage. You see the flashes of the talent. There was no question, I think, with both of these players, whether or not they're talented players, because in face of situations when they were getting volume, this is more of a volume conversation than a talent level, because we can point to metrics in which they are, you know, producing in face of low volume. You referenced Charbonnet and the, you know, yards created. But with Njigba, you could see the target share slowly kind of get up here, up and down. But I think it's also a case of just like, again, he's third on the list. He's got 90 targets. Lockett had 122 this year. So he was still third in the pecking order. I think really the question is, again, like you said, how do we project JSN in this offense that really kind of took a step back with Geno? That JSN is getting slot usage, not getting a lot of deep targets downfield. What is his ceiling in a Geno Smith, Pete Carroll offense? I have a little concern, and maybe try to project maybe that Seattle's one of those teams that has potential to get a QB.
They sure feel like it. I know the way that Geno contract is structured could put them in a position to consider doing so. They've got the draft capital to play with, you know, non-playoff team. And, you know, they could go into next year with Geno as well. It felt like they had everything in place. Like, they should have been a better team, a more competitive team. The defense struggled, and that could play a big factor as well. But nonetheless, I think Jackson Smith is a guy that, you know, we were a little early on, a little maybe bold on what he was going to do in year one. And obviously he was the unquestioned wide receiver one of this class coming into it. Maybe that's changed with people since then. And obviously being ranked number 17 currently, that's a little bit of reality has been infused into his dynasty ranking. Speaking of reality, people got a serious dose of it when it came to Najee Harris this year. Now, you and I were very high on Najee Harris. This is probably one of our bolder beliefs, was what yes. we thought Najee Harris was going to do. We came into the year thinking, hey, this could be this year's Josh Jacobs. This could be the guy that sees a monster level of targets, a monster level of volume. And there was a big faction of people that said, no, you're wrong. This is going to be Jaylen Warren's offense. The beat writers are already talking about it. He's going to cut into the workload. And he did to a degree. But even though I'm going to say that Najee Harris is on the miss list, I have one reason why I might say that. He still performed a lot better than I think given credit for.
Absolutely. I think the concern with Warren was always just what touches he would take. And it's obvious that he ate into a significant amount of Najee Harris's target share that rookie year. I don't know if with Warren and Najee Harris in that backfield that Najee gets a target share like he did with Big Ben. And it could be just that Ben couldn't throw it downfield and he was just having to target Najee. But in terms of, you know, situation, I think, yeah, again, we projected a lot on the target share, just not believing in as much as in Jaylen Warren's explosiveness and usage in this offense. But even though this is where we kind of say, you know, we got it wrong in terms of the target share, even in face of that, after the Steelers, you know, fired Matt Canada after week 11, you know, Jaylen Warren, 237 snaps, Najee Harris, 208. But Najee out-carried Warren 127-69. Warren tripled Najee's targets, 32-11. But touchdowns inside the five-yard line, Najee 3, Warren 0. So he's still going to get usage and carries. I just think we need to realize him more in a running back situation where he's just going to be the carry leader and not going to be the, you know, the target earner. But I think that just gives you a better realization of what Najee Harris is in the NFL. I still think, again, like you said, Najee still finished 13th among 48 qualifying running backs in rushing yards over expected. And this is all kudos to Adam Levitan who put this up here. This little snippet, this is a great thing. 13th among 48 running backs in rushing yards over expectation per attempt. That's better than Jonathan Taylor, Derrick Henry, Aaron Jones, and we just talked about Kenneth Walker. Now Warren, third in yards over rush yards over expectation, only behind Achane and McCaffrey. So Warren's explosive, but Najee's getting all the carries, especially at the goal line. I still think he had a good year. He's the only running back in Steelers history to have 3,000-yard rushing yard seasons in their first 3 years. So I'd say that's a positive.
It's absolutely a positive. And again, this is while having the RB57 run blocking and atrocious quarterback play. And again, you know, we talked about this off air. People will apologize for George Pickens and say because Kenny Pickett was no good. People will apologize for Deontay Johnson or tight end players in this offense. It was bad quarterback play. Nobody will give Najee Harris any credit when his quarterback play stinks. And I would argue he, as a running back, you know, has as much of a benefit from great quarterback play as receivers do, because what defenses feel threatened by Kenny Pickett? Again, average defenders in the box, number 23 in the league at 6.9. And had a boatload of carries last year too, number 6 in the league. So that average is based on a lot of opportunity. It's not one of these guys that had 49 carries and has a high, you know, average defenders in the box rate. It's relatively high. And again, I know people are like, oh, but it's number 23. It's not number 21. Guys, if I zoom in, if I lower that number to 6.7, he probably drops to like number 13. Bear in mind, we're talking fractions of a decimal move here, like slightly adjust the number and you drop significantly. So don't get caught up on the overall number on the, in this case, as much as how many defenders were in the box. He saw a lot of average, you know, extra defenders. So I think that for me, the reason I'm going to say that this was wrong is because too much belief was laid on top of the target opportunity. Too much belief came in saying, hey, this guy could be, again, a borderline 100 target guy, a 70 plus target guy. And obviously 38 on the year in 17 games, we really didn't get there. And that, for me, sounds like for you as well, was probably the biggest overall letdown with Najee's profile this year. And letting Jaylen Warren be more impactful than maybe I would have given credit for initially.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I think you just have a better picture of who Najee Harris is. And I think at this point, I think it may make him a buy in some cases because of just the rushing share that he brings and the number of red zone usage that he'll get compared to Warren.
Yeah. Yeah, it didn't work out as beneficially as some may have assumed coming into the year. Now, you know, leading off the top of the episode, I talked about climbing to the top of a radio tower and screaming out players at the top of your lungs. This was a player that some people decided to, you know, rip their shirt off, douse themselves in kerosene, and set themselves on fire in the name of burning Quentin Johnson. And some people were right about him not being good. You and I, looking at his profile, admittedly, I think it was very difficult to make the astute argument of why his college profile meant that he was going to be great. I think you have to dig into advanced metrics. I think you have to sort of, you know, bend reality a bit to bring Quentin Johnson to life. And the big part of it was that he was a first-round pick. He went to the Chargers. He was playing with Justin Herbert. Keenan Allen's getting older. Mike Williams has an injury history. And a lot of these things were factored in. We saw a little bit of good from Quentin Johnson this year, but man, it was a brutal start to the season.
Yeah, he was getting like literally no usage when Mike Williams and Keenan Allen were healthy. Even with Keenan Allen healthy, I think they still were slow to settle Johnston in. And then once Keenan Allen started to have injury issues, I think they were just forced to have to play him. And he was, you know, playing with, you know, practice squad guys that they were activating to the main roster. And, you know, I just, the number of drops and especially in key situations, obviously people will keep bring that up, but just the fact that he wasn't earning targets in the face of massive opportunity when Justin Herbert was the quarterback. And even with poor quarterback play, he still wasn't, you know, earning a massive target share. I think, yeah, we were, it's more of like, when you look at some of these other players in this draft class, someone like Jaden Reed, Jordan Addison had a pretty good year for his season. I think one of the things that separates, you know, that we can't, you know, put down as a metric is just the route running prowess by the scouts and the route running in general by Quentin Johnston was pretty poor. And the way he was used was sort of just to get him in open space and utilize his athleticism. But I think he made the easy things in the NFL hard. He's a guy that I think we really, really were banking on the athleticism tied to a good quarterback that could, you know, open up an opportunity for him to, you know, jump and have a really good season. And again, the opportunity was there and he kind of didn't really produce in the face of great opportunity.
That's kind of how this happens. These guys don't break out in year one when their opportunity reveals itself. They don't do much with it. And that's how these guys sort of, you know, fade into the background a little bit. And we cannot, you know, rule out the fact that sometimes these players just end up being more of a fit selection than a guy that's this go-to volume receiver. And also teams get it wrong, right? Teams draft guys incorrectly year over year, dating back decades. So is he dead? No, not yet. But is he a guy that you want to invest any serious capital into? No, not at all. I would rather leave Quentin Johnson. And again, this is going to go into some of what we learned. I would rather let somebody else who has a pocket full of hope take Quentin Johnson off my hands. Again, if they are sitting in the second round and they don't like some of these guys there And you look at some of these other wide receivers, again, look at how many guys in the second round have played well this year. If somebody of opportunity shows up and a guy's like, yeah, screw it, I like Quentin Johnson, he's a first round pick, I believe in him, I'll sell you my second right now during the draft, I would probably be open to it if I had a shot at a second round receiver, even a third round receiver that went to a good situation. That might be a little more questionable, but I'd prefer to lean into a second round guy. I'm not completely out on Johnson, but also in the back of my mind, I can't see myself starting this guy in head-to-head leagues with any confidence anytime soon. I just think too many things have to go right for him to sort of outperform what we've already seen from him in year one, which was not good.
Yeah, I just, again, I think that, yeah, it's a future use to look at these players at, you know, what their ranges are and just how low their, you know, floor is, really when they are going to get opportunity. And I think we were just chasing the upside of what Quentin Johnston could be in the Chargers offense with Justin Herbert, as opposed to looking at the player as a whole. Because if you look at other players, like, for example, you know, JSN, he's not producing at a significantly high level, but he's producing well enough. The talent is there. There aren't significant red flags. It's more of an opportunity question versus a talent question.
Yeah. It's one of those things where eventually he'll ascend this pecking order. But again, it's Charbonnet, it's Roschon Johnson, it's James Cook. It's these guys, like, they have to wait. There's a guy in front of them that earned that spot, that has that contract, that has that Kendre Miller, has that whatever in front of them. Their opportunity will come. We're betting on talent. We're not trying to, trying to square peg round hole the situation. Now,
right,
the absolute underwater fucking implosion. This was the implosion. The implosion was Jerry Jeudy. Now, Russell Wilson got benched despite actually playing better than I think maybe even the coaching staff and organization know. Should probably log on to Player Profiler to check it out. But Jerry Jeudy was a guy that last year was one of the best receivers in football by the numbers. I know people are like, get the fuck out of here. But seriously, he was one of the best receivers in football last year by the numbers. This year, total Jekyll and Hyde situation. What was the game when he was talking shit? Was it Steve Smith?
Yeah, he had a problem with Steve Smith because Steve Smith said he was sorry, basically. And yeah, he started yelling at him on the sideline, and he still really, I don't think, did anything.
I had a tweet where I quote tweeted that, and I said, 3 for 11 incoming. He ended up with 3 catches for like 17 yards that game. And I was like, damn, I was just being funny, but he actually had a tragically terrible game. Like, if you're going to talk trash to Steve Smith, you better ball out in that game. And, you know, Jerry Jeudy just once again really didn't string it together. Again, great target separator, great route runner, does all those things, but has proved himself time and time again to just not be sort of a 1B option or even a number one option, despite the player that he was coming out of college and all the hopes and dreams that circulated around him. And I don't know where it goes from here. I don't know where Jerry Jeudy ends up. I don't know if he stays with the Broncos. I don't know if he goes elsewhere. But he's a player that the variability of this profile, short of best ball formats, I am out on Jerry Jeudy. And God, he does so many things well, but he's clearly between the ears. Something is just not working for this guy.
Yeah, again, I think he's perplexing. He's perplexing in the fact that his just variability and in the profile. I mean, coming out of college, he had such high hopes and had a lot of good metrics on him in terms of like breakout, but he didn't really dominate in that offense at Alabama. And again, he was a great route runner, but I don't know. Sometimes some of these guys, there are red flags with the dominator. He wasn't really as explosive as he looked in college. And I think some of those things hindered his profile. And then again, sometimes we can't, put together the numbers or the whatever is going on processing wise in the receiver, or, you know, that's up to like scouting and stuff like that, but advanced metrics can't find out what, you know, whether or not this guy's trying hard enough, right? To his potential. I think he's just someone that has fallen off significantly, and I definitely do not want to have any part of him in head to head leagues.
It's shitty because 2022, what if not for 2022, if 2022 looked like either the 2 years before it, there wouldn't have been this booby trap with Jerry Jeudy. This, okay, here comes the big breakout. He's all teed up. Monster, you know, yards per route run last year. Very productive. Air yards, you know, all these things were in his favor. Russell Wilson going into additional year. Things were supposed to work out. And then just lemon meringue pie to the face. Doesn't work out for Jerry Jeudy. And I think that was the one where we're just way too bold on what he was going to be. And again, like, what did Courtland Sutton end up with target-wise this year?
Let's see.
Do we have that number? Because I'm just curious if we look at, like, the pinnacle of what it means to be a Denver Bronco. Right here. 90?
Yep.
In 16 games. So, Denver, man. I mean, and again, we talked about this through the year, and we'll get into this here in the end, and, like, the sort of realization. But Denver was right here, bottom 10 in the league and wide receiver target rate of 56.1%. I sometimes it's the quarterback. Again, like, Russell Wilson since the beginning of time has not been a volume passer. Here he is in a new situation with Sean Payton, with OCs to throw the ball a lot, all these things in his favor. And still the exact same guy. It didn't change one bit. And I think sometimes that's what's got to be taken into account. And we talk about this with guys like CJ Stroud. He's already being unlocked in year one. And I just think that necessarily means he may just be that gunslinger. Already a great passer. But unlocked to just like target lock on his favorite guys. You want those guys. You want those quarterbacks, the ones that are like, I don't care who my third option is, who my second option is at times. Like, I'm going to the number one, Justin Jefferson, Jamar Chase, whatever, funnel it to him. CeeDee Lamb, over-target them, get that production. So, yeah, Jerry Jeudy may have suffered at the hands of Russell Wilson being Russell Wilson. Russell was fine, but that's how the cookie crumbles, Alexander. And we got burned bad.
We got burned. We all got burned by Russell Wilson, you know, still trying to buy into the Sean Payton Russell Wilson combination. We don't even know his future. And then just thought that he would elevate players like Jerry Jeudy to, you know, a higher level. And I think we bought into too many things that were outside of, you know, our control and projection of an offense that we really didn't know what was going to look like. Right. So.
Yeah. I wonder if, you know, Russell Wilson's already, you know, he's wanted to own a professional sports team. What if he buys the Denver Broncos, fires Sean Payton, makes himself the starter again, and is the starting quarterback owner of the team?
It is possible. I mean, yeah, he can, him and Sierra's the head coach. Yeah. So it would be amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about himself in third person as the owner.
Like, absolutely. Yeah,
Okay. I don't know where this is going. All right. So, some of the lessons learned. That's kind of something that we wanted to jump into in this episode. Looking back on this season, our process, some of the outcomes and some things we learned, what were some of the lessons learned that you and I had gone over?
I think one of the lessons learned is, you know, spending a lot of capital on running backs and buying proven aging running backs, players like Joe Mixon, Alvin Kamara, that we knew with their contract, with their given situation, were going to be guaranteed touches. We weren't buying projections, right? We weren't selling the farm for someone like Bijan Robinson, who is an extremely talented player, but did not get the touch distribution that we thought he was going to get for a first-round running back, especially one that got drafted in the top 10. You could get someone like Joe Mixon and Alvin Kamara for second-round picks, and then spend, if you wanted to, if you spent your first round pick and try to trade for, you know, target hog wide receivers, I think one of the videos we'd made a while back was just all around spending all of our draft capital on getting these type of target hog wide receivers if you already have the quarterback, and buying proven aging running backs with our second round picks, as opposed to trying to buy the elite rusher that in whatever class is coming in. I think that's the biggest thing for me. Was one of the lessons was just proven aging running backs was huge.
Yeah, and we talked about buying Kyren for a two when you could have bought him for a two. And guys like to, well, you're talking about James Conner have been, you know, bulldozers all year long and proved it. And a guy like Nick Chubb may be that guy next year if he bounces back healthy with his profile. I mean, if anybody's going to bounce back, it's going to be a guy like Nick Chubb for the, you know, 23rd time. So, yeah, I agree that the aging running backs thing. I think the other part, you know, kind of tethered to this as well is, you know, don't get out over your skis in year one for a running back. Sometimes these guys have to learn the game, especially in an offense that's already a good offense, that's a playoff contention type team, where, again, you see it with Jahmyr Gibbs, who's been good this year, but David Montgomery's still in the mix. You see it with some of these running backs, again, whether it's Zach Charbonnet, whether it's Kendre Miller behind Alvin Kamara. Like, the veterans own the opportunity until the coaching staff bails on them or they're inefficient, and they become this buy low opportunity next year. James Cook was a great example. Again, we've talked about Kendre Miller on this episode. Could be Roshan next year. Again, the guys in front of him are nothing. So those are the players that kind of come to mind where right now guys in your dynasty league are probably like, ah, I'm out on Roshan. He didn't really do anything of prominence this year. Wouldn't be shocking at all. Even if you do this for cheap, Roshan come out next year, win that starting job and be the lead back in what could be a really high powered offense. Again, with all the capital and potential of this offense, could be an entirely different animal. So those are some of the names that come to mind. And I think that, you know, again, Tyjae Spears kind of showing out a little bit this year. Just give these guys some time. Don't quit on them because they didn't do anything in year one. Remember, sometimes it takes an additional year. Rashad White, right?
Rashad White, I mean, look at Zamir White now when Josh Jacobs is not out. Look at his how he's produced. Again, I think Roshan's a big one. A Roshan you can get for between a 2024 mid-second to late second. I would do that all day so I can get a running back, especially with the running back class that we've got coming in. I think Roshan Johnson, Zamir White, some of these guys were maybe a year early on some of the running backs here, especially Roshan, that have just, you know, they had great opportunity, not great opportunity. They had showcased their talent. They just were limited for their opportunity. And I think that opportunity will come up one of these games next year.
Yeah, no, it's 100% a fact. And I do believe that. The other part of this, you know, one of the other lessons learned, and I think we've always believed in this, but I think it's a matter of, you know, being more outward and more outspoken about it, is looking at ranges versus definitives. Guys came in and said that Kyren Williams was absolute dog shit. Well, that just happens to be factually incorrect, right? Had you spoken in definitives, you might say Kyren Williams looks like this running back on the upper end and this running back on the lower end. And then from there go based on probability, based on performance, based on collegiate, whatever. I believe he looks more like this guy on the lower end. But when you go out so bold, and I don't understand why some people do it, because maybe they feel like it's their brand. Some people feel like maybe mom and dad won't love them if they don't. They go out and they just have to say definitively, you know, with the throwing caution into the wind, this guy sucks, that guy's great, that guy's mediocre, this guy, whatever. You're going to end up being a lot more educated, higher-end player with more foresight built into your style of play if you can sort of read between the lines about what could be, right? That goes for guys like Isaiah Pacheco, right? The draft capital behind him, but looking at the athleticism and going, okay, best case scenario, he's the lead running back in Kansas City. Worst case scenario, he gets cut from this roster and it doesn't work out for him. And again, Jaylen Warren. So when you find yourself conflicted, trying to look at narrative, look at cause and effect, look at range of outcome. Go look at the prospect profile, look at potential range of outcome. Look at what a ceiling is, look at what the floor is, and really try and work through that. I mean, this year more so than many other years prior, backup quarterbacks were incredibly relevant. Backup running backs were incredibly relevant, from the Jerome Fords to, again, the Jalen Warrens to the Devon Achans to the Zeke Elliott, Zach Moss, you know, take your pick. These guys really like came in full force, and, you know, we're seeing a league change as they add games, and we're seeing a lot of injuries as part of that reason. Guys are playing more snaps, and I think we will see the league continue to the top guys in the league will always get a lot of work. But if you're a playoff team and a running back showing any level of injury or instability, I think that ushering in support is going to be something we see more often. So just having your hands on some of these guys that are up and coming is very valuable. Again, Tony Pollard, before he became the one-man show behind Ezekiel Elliott, was a great example of a guy that had the profile, had the athleticism, had, you know, a great offense to play in, and was functionally great while in it. Kyren will always be, and I will just say this, Kyren will always be a blind spot for people. Because you and I,
always,
we're probability guys. I would have put money on the fact that he just was mediocre 99 out of 100 times, and I would have been right a lot. But on this planet, in this multiverse, I was wrong. and so I think that's where we just have to play a little more range of outcome. Like, you know, I know a couple guys, Scott Connor in particular, he's got a phrase where he says, you know, any running back on a 53. And just the idea that, like, or whatever, any running back on a starting roster, I want them. Because it's true, like, at some point, one of these guys is going to pop. And when we look at, like, Kyren, for example, what Kyren did well in college, you're like, all right, well, if that versatility at the league level, if it reveals itself on even a semi-high-end scale, this guy could be great in this offense. And he was way better than anybody thought. But that's a product of maybe leaning too hard into the definitive of history says this guy sucks versus going, well, I've got really bad guys on the bottom of my roster. Why not take a shot on this guy? You know, why hold running back X, Y, and Z, Sean Tucker, right now, with Sean Tucker coming into the year? Why not sell Sean Tucker for Kyren? Or why not, you know, like early on in the year when he's got some buzz? Again, I realize, doing this argument, you could go, well, Sean Tucker's profile was really good too. It's a hard game to play, so you have to play range of outcomes. But in the offense in Tampa Bay, you had Rashad White. So anyways, I digress. I think the point here is range of outcome versus definitives, especially if you don't want people, you know, talking shit behind your back in the future for wackadoodle things that you said. Lastly, target share realization. You know, we talked about this coming into the year, and I can pull it up on here. We talked about what it means to be a number two receiver in an offense relative to the number one. And this goes for all of these guys. If you flash back in time a year ago, you love T. Higgins because he plays opposite Jamar Chase. You love Devonta Smith because he plays opposite A.J. Brown. Oh, you're going to love Jordan Addison. He plays opposite Justin Jefferson. Not true, not true, not true. Wrong three times, because the alpha in these offenses will always be the alpha in these offenses. I mean, we can look at it. A.J. Brown, 158 targets. And what do we say? Devonta Smith, 112. 112 targets. And we got blown out by 40-plus targets. Again, we look at who are some of the other names. Jamar Chase in 16 games, 145 targets. We could go look at T. Higgins. I already looked it up. 6.3 targets per game as a number two. Jordan Addison, 100 targets. Justin Jefferson, I know he missed a bunch of time here. How many total targets did he have? Let's sort that. Justin Jefferson, where'd he end up? Can we pull this up? Okay, same amount of targets as him in seven less games. So, again, guys, you're putting yourself in this really weird categorical dimension where you believe that it's good to be the second option on a team that's going to funnel passes to somebody, but you would rather have Nico Collins. It's why you and I were so high on Drake London, because right now there's nobody to compete. And if we're playing range of outcomes, He could be a 160 target guy next year, right?
So he's got the profile. Yeah.
He does. You have to get out of this universe where you're so convinced that Jordan Addison is the guy. You know, we talk about this with guys like DJ Moore, right? These are the guys that if you're holding a future pick next year, and you're out of the reach of the quarterbacks and the top two receivers are gone, it's all a dice roll. Why not go get a guy like DJ Moore who's an absolute guarantee? And I think that leads us to probably our fifth lesson learned.
Yeah, I know. I absolutely guarantee. And I think, I think wide receiver target share was the biggest thing. There's definitely, you know, situations when you look at some of these players that the realization that they're not going to get the crazy target share. And you talk about like DJ Moore for like a first round pick or any of these other guys. What does it look like for if Kansas City drafts a wide receiver in the first round, but Rashee Rice is already commanding a significant target share and out, you know, he's a target leader in receiving yards and stuff in comparison to Travis Kelce right now, you know, and obviously Kelsey's 34 years old, but Rashee Rice is already sort of commanding and producing at a high level. What does the number two in Kansas City really look like in that offense? If there's still Kelce, Rashee Rice, and then a third option, are you really going to spend a mid first round? Or are you going to go draft? Are you going to go trade it for DJ Moore, who's going to get 17 points per game? His best, you know, it could be with Caleb Williams, Justin Fields. It doesn't matter. He did it the entire time in Carolina. Go get someone like DJ Moore instead of going and chasing the second option that is going to be explosive and they're good receivers, but they're not going to get the opportunity. And that's what wins, is chasing the opportunity and the talent, not just talent alone.
And you and I talked about this. You know, you look at DJ Moore this year, best fantasy season he's ever had, lowest air yards he's seen in 5 years, only 136 targets, but 1,350 plus receiving yards with Justin Fields, who, by the way, stinks, as we were told. But there's the potential that maybe Caleb Williams goes there or Drake May goes there. Any number of guys could be great. Also, maybe Justin Fields stays and maybe they take all this draft capital and all this opportunity and they build around him and they do something great. But nonetheless, this is exactly, as you're saying, the problem with Dynasty right now. Give me DJ Moore over the wide receiver 3, 4, and 5. Even if I'm wrong about that, and there's no way that they're Justin Jefferson, but even if I'm moderately wrong and he's a 150 target guy, whoever the wide receiver 3 is, it's going to take 2-3 years before that actually stings, right? Like, I'm going to get solid production out of DJ Moore for the next 3 years. And again, as a betting man who will put money down on any of these things, yeah, there's a chance I'm wrong. But in terms of range of outcome, there's a much higher likelihood that the number 3 receiver in this future class that goes pick number 18 this year to whoever, maybe it's to the Bengals, I don't know, you know, number 18 in the draft ends up at 70% of his ceiling and ends up a 135 target guy. And then you're like, his rookie year is a lost year. Then year 2 is maybe an ascension year. Year 3 is when he really shows out. By then, DJ Moore has been a 15, 18 point per game guy for 2-3 years.
Yep.
And you're going for titles, right? So, and you bought him at a 107, 108, 109, which is typically a gamble of a pick. Ask the guy who drafted so far JSN in year 1. Ask the guy who drafted Quentin Johnson in year 1. Ask the guy that reached for Zach Charbonnet in year 1. Ask the guy. I mean, there's no guarantees in this at all. So the guarantee is DJ Moore. It really is what it comes down to. So I think that's kind of the other lesson learned, is the known commodity will always be the known commodity, but everybody always wants what's in the mystery box. Even though what's in the mystery box might be DJ Moore.
Yeah, and you see examples in this in fantasy. You see examples of this in the NFL just in general, with teams spending the 3rd overall pick on a quarterback from South Dakota State, who now is the backup to Dak Prescott. You know, they chase the black box prospect. You chase the opportunity, the upside, right? But when the reality is right in front of you, the opportunity, the tier drop off from pick 3 and then to pick 4 is significant. And then from like 7 to 8 is another teardrop. There's significant teardrops, and it's knowing and realizing the opportunity to go and get a definitive player is such a key to continuously winning in Dynasty and not spending picks and draft picks on players that are just not going to produce. Yeah. I think that's the key here is knowing when to buy or sell certain things. And that's, I think, what we will spend more of our time and building, and what we are building for you all is to build something that gives you a more definitive answer on how to do that.
And I think that's a great segue into, you know, one of the last two topics here that we wanted to get to. Just talking about the site, the process, where we're at. Alexander and I, so here's the story for everybody listening. We have a website. It's all built out. Looks great. But it's parked and it's hidden and you can't find it. But we're in the process of working on the tooling. And again, when I say tooling, this is on a very like limited level in terms of what it is we want to put out on the market. We've been working on a trade calculator, and the trade calculator is powered by the rankings. So really, the rankings have been where all the time and effort has gone to, and it's been iteration after iteration, a version after version. And Alexander and I finally kind of coming to this realization where, you know, I've likened rankings to art, right? Like, everybody's going to have different opinions. Some people are going to look through the window of an art gallery, then go back to their easel and paint. We're trying to be the version where we're just looking at nature. We're going to come up with our own beliefs and look at history and look at production and run, you know, algorithmic equations and formulaic answers. And we want to be rooted in what it is that we're doing. And a big part of this is how we're going to rank the players. It's not just that we're going to have the system look at it, or we're just going to slide players around flippantly. You know, we're going to work within standard deviations. We're going to work within things that we can explain to you, cause and effect, why we did it. Not just, hey, this wide receiver went from wide receiver 59 to wide receiver 1 in 1 week. No, there's going to be systems in place to check changes in important metrics. And Alexander's been working really hard to code these types of things in the future. And I led off the show by saying how robust and future-proof this system can be because of all the work that he's done to really build it out. I mean, the foundation of this is very, very strong. The information, the data, where we pull it from, it's very clean. And the ability to manipulate what it is that we're doing and branch it off to create other great things from it is very fruitful because of what he's done versus just going in balls to the wall, just throwing something together like a buzzsaw, and you end up with this patch together, Band-Aid, you know, half a nail partway in. And when you want to start to iterate on it or expand, it all falls apart. So I know that we're going to go back after this year. We're going to review, you know, a lot of, you know, the rookie information that comes in, what we saw last year, you know, again, run probably more linear regression analysis to, again, look at what mattered. And again, fantasy points matter. Opportunity matters. It proves itself year over year. But the rankings will be rooted in this. And when you guys see the rankings, you're not going to agree with everything. And that's fine. We understand that. But as we've gone through the year very guarded and not really shared this with anybody, Alexander and I would have conversations where we'd go, man, did you see where we had CJ Stroud 5 weeks early? Did you see where we had Kyren Williams? Did you see where we had so-and-so? And that for us was really the sort of, you know, the payoff pitch for us. We felt good looking back and going, damn, I wish we had shared this with people because it was so accurate at times.
Yeah, no, I think we talk about, sorry about the dogs in the background, but I think what we talked about is how we want to make sure that we're giving you accuracy, and that's the key. And I think what we have done and spent so much time on with the rankings is making sure that it's not too binary and it understands context that is outside of the scope of the metrics that we're feeding it. And so I think that's what's taken so much time and effort is trying to get rooted into in that piece and making sure that the model that we're building, the rankings, the tooling utilizes those things. And I think really we want to build a product that you all will be happy with and feel that you are getting accuracy and not just getting something of our opinion. We want it to be more of just a revelation of sort of like viewing players through the market, viewing players through their production, and then viewing players sort of through the lens in which we see, right, the players. And so I think that's what the key is. And those three elements is what this has been rooted in. And that's, I think, why we've spent so much time making sure we get to that point. And yeah, I think everything is built off of this ranking system. And so we are, you know, again, working diligently to get it out to you all, and look forward to getting feedback from you all to help us get better, because I can only do so much. Nate and I can only do so much on trying to get this better. And maybe there's a metric we're missing, or maybe there's something that you all could give us feedback on to make us better. Because I think fantasy football, especially like things like keep, trade, cut, is just opinion based, right? So if there's things there, information, especially analysis that maybe we're not looking at, there's a lot of people that are really in the dark. They're not online. They're doing all this stuff, or they're on the Discord and they just are not super active, that have great ideas on how we can utilize this information. I think that's the key. And again, yeah, I think it's just, we want to give you an accurate product that you will feel comfortable using on a consistent basis. And I think that's sort of rooted in what we have been working on for the, you know, last year or so now. So
I think too that what's really cool, you know, it's like eating at a restaurant. This extravagant meal comes out. You just see how delicious the meal looks, and you put it in your mouth and you consume it, but you don't realize what took place in the kitchen. And every one of these players is ranked based on opportunity and vetting the opportunity metrics and running, you know, regression analysis and looking at correlation outcomes and weighting those appropriately, looking at performance metrics that matter. Again, running an analysis, weighting those accordingly. And then also, like you mentioned, market share, taking into account how does the market view these players. So all of that goes in. So when you see a player ranked, it's not just Alexander or me sliding them up the ranks. It's like hundreds of hours of time that have been input, along with, I mean, thousands of data points going back, play by play data going back 20 years, you know, running back multiple seasons. So there's so much to it. And I don't say this to say that it's going to be 100%, because we're data people and we know nothing is 100%. But the biggest and most important factor to us is accuracy. The second most important factor to us is the ability to explain it to you and stand behind our reasoning and not be ashamed of ourselves for an outcome. Because I know a lot of people just throw rankings together, slide players around, just do things at what I believe is random or emotionally or suddenly based off a couple of weeks. And we've got a system that's in place that, again, that's so robust and is designed to look at what really matters based on correlation and then help give you guys the best possible outcome so that you don't buy into a guy who has two solid games and then kind of disappears in the night. Or again, a guy like Puka Nacua, our system was like really high on Puka coming in after what he had done. And while people were saying it was synthetic, it was on the other side of the coin going, this is definitely not synthetic, and here's the reasons why. And again, we'll be able to explain that to you in the future. Lastly, and one of the most important things, and again, we've done a lot of episodes, but we really haven't done anything like this where we've talked more candidly about the situation. Community involvement, and that goes to social media, that goes to Discord, that goes to email, that goes to any place where you can communicate with us. And this is going to be primarily Discord in the future. We want to integrate ourselves more into the community, and we want to integrate you guys more into what it is that we do. And the future for this show is talking more about trades we've made in leagues, trades you guys are making in leagues, using our trade calculator, which is something that'll be available in the near future. We'll probably use it on a show before you guys ever get to use it, but I can assure you that those people that use it first will be members of the Discord. So, of course, link in the description. Make sure you're part of that. And we're going to revamp the Discord as it exists right now. Me and Blitzing Buzzard, one of the greatest individuals who ever walked this earth, John, we're going to sit down, talk about some of the channels, and work on revamping this and hopefully put ourselves in a position where we've got some private channels that are just for particular members, whether it's based on the XP and effort that you put in on a monthly basis, whether it's your subscription ranking on the website, because yes, the trade calculator will be free. The rankings will be a premium thing. They're not going to be extremely expensive. We're planning on doing a month-by-month thing for you guys. I think that, again, it's just purely a juxtaposition opportunity. You're going to love these rankings, what we're going to do with them, and there will be more insight in those rankings as well. But really, at the end of the day, it's about sharing our efforts with you guys, feedback, community. I think that this also includes doing live YouTube shows in the future as well. That's something that Alexander hasn't experienced yet. I've done quite a few. I've told him, get ready, it's going to blow your hair back. they're a lot of fun, though. It's a different energy. And I think doing more actionable trade content and sticking to what it is that I think we do well, which is player predictive analysis, I think that's always going to be something that's going to be hard to decouple from our system. It's how I came up. I know it's something that Alexander, listening to Sonic Truth and how he's developed as a content creator, it's something that's in his mind as well. We're always trying to predict, and that's very hard to separate from the analysis that we do. So that'll always be part of it, but that's how you get an edge, being early on players based on being able to see further through the fog than other people can. And between the tools and what we're designing and what we believe in, I think we're going to give you all those things, and we want to center it around the community. So I think in the future, we'll have a lot more fun doing live shows where we'll bring you guys in. We'll do giveaways. We'll go through trades. You could show us trades you made. We'll fry them. We'll applaud them. You never know. And I think that's kind of the future of what we're trying to do, because I know that one thing we've talked about many times, and the website has this look, we really want to gamify Dynasty. And I don't mean gamify it in the sense that it's a fantasy sport. I mean gamify it in the sense that we want to make it more energetic and make it something where you guys want to keep coming back. You want to do it. You don't want to put the controller down. And I think the calculator, and I think what we're going to do in terms of live content, show content, Discord content, I think it's going to be a place where people are going to want to be. And so I think that's something that we're going to push really hard to do here in 2024.
Yeah, no, I'm excited. And yeah, I think there's a lot of amazing things that we can do once we have the, you know, information settled. And we always say it, we're super close. But again, yeah, we are literally like on the 1 yard line. We just want to make sure that it looks and feels like what you all would want as your ranking system. But again, you'll have your, you know, disagreements and stuff like that, but that will make us better. You know, we utilize your feedback to help us build stuff for you, because we're building this for our community and for the people that want to get better at Dynasty football.
Yeah, you know what? Maybe you guys are wrong too. Maybe we're right and you're wrong. So your feedback, you'd cram it up your pie hole, but we'll listen.
We'll probably get some insight. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, who knows? Know. Hopefully that's our goal. Just if you come out of here just gaining just a slight bit of insight, and you know, but yeah.
Yeah. So we're definitely going to try to be a lot more outside the box and get away from just some of the run-of-the-mill content. And I don't want to call it run-of-the-mill, but I think that things, as we talked about, got a little stale, and we want to definitely, reinfuse this in a different way and allow more of our personality to come out rather than, all right, here we go. Here's the show. Let's go. You know, right. A little bit more of who we are as people, as content creators, have more fun with it. And then, of course, have fun with you guys. And I think that's just going to make for a way more enjoyable show. I know when I was doing I'm Outraged, they were always just a blast. You guys didn't know what was coming based on what wacky stuff I was going to do. We had a guest on. The guest was on skates. They didn't know what was coming. And so I think the ability to, you know, call people out in real time and bring a question on the screen, or, you know, the variability and the unpredictable nature of a really great show that is coupled with great analysis and interesting conversation, I think is a recipe for something that's watchable 24/7. And the other part of it is you guys can catch the replay. It's not like the evening news where if you don't catch it, you missed it, right? Like, you guys can check it out. You can listen later on the podcast. You can watch it back on YouTube, all those things. So, I think that's the end of the soapbox for me. Alexander, anything else from you?
I just want to get these rankings out for you all to get better at fantasy, and I'm just super excited to. I mean, I've been jonesing to get this thing out for a while, so I really want to get this out for you all to enjoy and play around with, and happy to hear what insight you all feel from it.
Yep, Yep. So, all right. Well, so with that being said, the last thing we need to get to in terms of shows in the future, in the off season, we haven't really figured this out exactly yet, whether it's going to be a show every other week, whether it's going to be a show once a month. When I was doing the Sonic Truth Dynasty podcast, we were once a month in the off season. Alexander and I will kind of figure that out. I know that we've been, you know, pushing really hard on YouTube videos and trying to get those out and grow, because this is, there's a big audience over there, a growing audience over there. So we may be semi less frequent. Maybe we'll do something simple. I don't know. But the off season's a moderately dead period, so we'll see if we can drum something up. But that's where the Discord will be a great thing. So more to come on that. But for now, I would say we're once a month. If we do it twice a month, that would be great. But that's kind of the plan going ahead. But of course, we'll make sure you guys are well aware of what's coming up at the website. So of course, go to the Discord. Go look up the Dynasty Rankings Discord, link in the description. Join that. You guys won't miss a thing. I'll ping the whole crew. Sign up over at dynastyrankings.com. Put your email in, of course. You'll get information there. We've got a pretty big email list going. And then we'll announce it on Twitter, and we'll announce it on YouTube, and we'll announce it everywhere, so you guys won't miss it. But yeah, that's where we're at with it. And again, I'm glad we could be transparent on this episode and let you guys know that we're working our asses off and we're trying to get this out, and we've been working on this for a really long time, and you know, it will be worth the wait in the end, and I think it'll be something that you'll use pretty frequently. So with that being said, we will see you guys on the next Dynasty Rankings podcast, either 4 weeks from now or 2 weeks from now, but it'll be a surprise either way. We'll see you then.